ॐ भरताय प्रतिपूजितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्ददामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वैषिणी. Okay, we're in verse 16 of chapter 2. Nasato vidyate bhavaha. Nasato vidyate bhavaha. Na bhavo vidyate sataha. Na bhavo vidyate sataha. Ubayorapi drishtuntaha. Ubayorapi drishtuntaha. Twanayostatvadarshibihi. Sandhi. Na asattaha vidyate bhavaha. Na abhavaha vidyate sattaha. Ubayoho api drishtaha antaha tu anayoho tattva darshibihi. Na asattaha vidyate bhavaha. Bhavaha. Bhavaha means existence or being. Okay? Something that has bhava, it exists. It has being, substance. Being is the being or existence is a good translation. So bhavaha. Na vidyate bhavaha. Vidyate from vid means is, like asti. Na vidyate is not. Na vidyate bhavaha. There is no bhava. There is no being. For what? Asattaha. Genitive singular from asat. Consonant ending noun takes that us ending. So asattaha, genitive singular. So for that which is asat, not real. Now we'll get into a definition. I'll tell you in detail what asat means. But just for now, for that which is not real, there is no being. There is no existence. Na asattaha vidyate bhavaha. So for that which is not real, which is asat, there is no bhava. And then, na abhavaha vidyate sattaha. Na abhavaha. There is no non-existence. Remember, bhava means being or existence. A negates the noun. So abhavaha, there is no non-existence. Na abhavaha vidyate. There is no non-existence or non-being, right? Vidyate is na vidyate. Sattaha, genitive singular for sat. So sattaha would be ablative or genitive singular. Here it's genitive singular. So for that which exists, for that which is sat, there is no non-existence. For that which is asat, not real, there is no existence. Okay? It's a whole Vedanta. It's really one. This is an incredibly beautiful verse. Ubayoho api drishtaha antaha. The antaha, the end. Anta literally means end, and it means a lot of different things, but here anta is in the sense of truth. means the final conclusion, the final understanding of this antaha ubayoho, of these two statements, the end of these two statements, means the truth, the reality, you know, what all of this implies. So we would translate antaha, the end, drishtaha, past passive participle, nominative singular, antaha, like ramaha, nominative singular, antaha drishtaha, the antaha drishtaha is seen of these two. What are the two? That there's no existence for what is unreal, that's one, and there's no reality for what is, and there's no non-existence for what is real, that's the second one. So the end of this, the truth of this, is seen by who? So ubiyoho, of these two, api means even, it's just separating, differentiating the two, of these two, this one and this one. Drishtaha anta, the truth of this is seen. To anayoho. Anayoho, again, in the genitive dual. Ubayoho, genitive dual. Yoho, right? Ubayoho. Ubaya, ubayoho. Uba, ubayoho. Ubayoho api drishtaha. Antaha tu anayoho. Anayoho is a pronoun. Means of these two. Of both of these. Ubayoho, anayoho. Of both of these, right, of these two, anayoho ubayoho, the end, the truth is seen, by who? Tetva darshibihi, by those who know the truth. Now, tetva means truth. Darshi, you translate darshibihi, right, from darshin. Darshibihi is the instrumental plural, that bihi ending is always going to be instrumental plural. So, tattva darshi bihi, by those who know the truth, that they use this word darshi. Darshi means see. So, it's not just knowing as an intellectual knowledge. It's the ones who have seen this, have cognized it, have recognized it directly and immediately, not as a theory, but as a recognition of the reality, of this reality. So, for the ones who have seen this truth, right, the reality of this, the truth, the ones who know the truth, who have seen this truth, the reality, the truth of this, of both of these, is known. There's an understanding of this, is clear, right? Is final, antaha, without doubt. It's known without any doubt. That's the antaha. Recognized without any doubt. So now let's see what it is that's recognized. When we say advaita, means non-dual, one without a second. If we say that the order, that the reality, which is the vision of the Upanishads, that this whole that we experience, all that exists, everything, is only one, one without a second, that there is in fact no duality here. If we are going to say something like that, we then have to account for this duality that we experience. You can't just say there's no duality here and experience duality. Right? So if you say that there's no duality here, that means you have to account for, you have to make a person understand what is this duality then that we're experiencing. And so this duality that we experience, and by duality, I mean that which is more than one. So, in very simply, in this creation, which is manifest, space, air, fire, water, earth, there's time, there's change, there's an infinite multiplicity of things, right? So there's infinite multiplicity of things on a physical level that I perceive through my sense perception, and there's an infinite multiplicity of things on a subtle level that I think, that I feel, that I imagine, right? All of the things, the visions, the experiences that go on in the mind, and all of the experiences that are born of sense perception. Those also go on in the mind. What is born of sense perception goes on in the mind, because we're only experiencing everybody a thought modification. But the mind is capable of having memories and imaginations and feelings that are not generated from sense perception, right? They might be a combination of They might have originated initially from sense perception, but when I'm drawing on a memory, I'm pulling something out of my mind that's not being given to me at that moment by sense perception. When I have a feeling, I'm not seeing that feeling. I'm not hearing the feeling. That's something that's being generated in the mind. So that's what we call subtle. So the subtle world also, our subtle world of experience is also very diverse and multiple. From the individual standpoint, what's going on in my mind is many and varied and multi-layered. And what's going on in my mind is different than what's going on in your mind, in your mind, in your mind. So the subtle world, you know, and then even from the Upanishad, when the Upanishads talk about Ishvara, they talk about this whole physical universe, which is an infinite manifestation of diversity, of duality, of multiplicity, everything imaginable, right, that we can possibly perceive in the universe is what we call Virat. If we want to give a name of the whole, we call it Virat. Just like by that I mean if we look at all of the waves in the ocean and we want to give a name for this whole expansive body of water, we say it's the ocean, right? So if we want to give a name for this whole expansive universe, all that exists that can be perceived through sense perception, we give the name Virat, right? And then the individual is one who's part of that Virat. So Virat is really the name for the infinite expansive universe filled with every multi and varied things, right? And that Virat is the name for Ishvara on the physical level. On the subtle level, the name for Ishvara is Hiranyagarbha, meaning just as you have a mind, you have a mind, you have a mind, I have a mind, there's many subtle, we dream, we imagine. There are laws that hold together that subtle universe also, just like there's laws that hold together the physical universe. And just like I have one body within the physical world and you have a body and you have a body within the physical world, now, all of these bodies coexist within a series of laws. Like that, the subtle world also coexists. Everything within the subtle world is held together by a series of laws also. And if we look at that series of laws on the subtle level, then we call that Hiranyagarbha. So the ocean, the infinite ocean on a subtle level, you know, is Hiranyagarbha. The infinite creation on a physical level is Virat. On a subtle level is called Hiranyagarbha, right? That's all duality, right? And the vision of the Upanishads is all of this duality that we experience is one without a second. That it is only one thing. And it's important to realize exactly what it means by one without a second, what it means by non-dual, so that you really understand. I find that teaching at CIS, I've really understood how many definitions of non-duality there are. So we have to know what Advaita Vedanta, what the Upanishads are talking about when they say the word. Another some spiritual discipline or a form of Tibetan Buddhism or Buddhism, for instance, might use this word, or other spiritual groups may use the word in some way, in a different way. Advaita's very specific about how it's using this word when it says that this world, that all that is one without a second. And this is what it means. If I say something is Advaita, non-dual, that means the three different types of divisions that it's possible to make in the universe do not apply to it. And these divisions are this. One is called Vijatiya Bheda. Vijatiya Bheda is the division between groups or sets or species. Like I can say this world, if I use the word sets, for in math that's a good term to use, I could say this whole universe, everything that exists, can be divided into groups or into sets. Like there are so many oak trees. That's one set, oak trees, right? Pine trees, another set. Cats, another set. Dogs, another set. But of course, within the cats, there are many multiple sets within the cats. But there's still sets, like there's Siamese cats and whatever type, Persian cats, whatever. There's so many different kinds, but we can divide them, everything, into groups, right? And so that's dual, because there are many, many groups in this universe. For Advaita, no groups. If something is non-dual, that means there are no groups. Okay? Number two way that we divide the world up. First, we divide it up into groups. Then we look at one group. This is called Sajatiya Veda. The first one was Vijatiya. We see there's all kinds of groups. Second one is Sajatiya. We take one group, and then we see that this one group, typical of all groups, has many members. It's not just one cat. There are many cats. Right? It's not just one pine tree. There are many pine trees. So this means in the world of duality, first of all, there are many, many groups, dual, and then each group has many members, right? Dual. One without a second, no groups, and no members. Okay. Third, Swagata Veda. Groups, each group has members, each member has parts. Duality. So say, for instance, you have the group of cats, you have one group of Persian cats. There are thousands of them. Dual. You pick out one. So now there's one cat. But this cat has many, many parts. It has hands and feet and paws and, you know, has everything. It has all the organs. The cat is infinitely divisible into parts. Duality. So now, say you say, as some will say, there is only one non-dual universe. What do they mean by that? What they mean, if you say there's only one non-dual universe, is that there's one infinite universe, and it is only one group. There aren't two groups. Okay? Just think about it. If you say the whole infinite universe, everything in it is interconnected. Right? Can you imagine that? Even on a subtle level, on all levels, there's just one infinite Ishwara, say. There's one infinite creation on all levels. Everything is interconnected. It's non-dual. What they mean is that there is one group that has only one member. In other words, there's the one universe. There aren't two universes. There's not one universe and something else. There's only one universe. And this isn't Vedanta, but I want you to understand how people can talk about non-dual. There's one universe. There's not one universe and then another Timbuktu, whatever you want to call it. There's not universe A and a universe and something else. There's just one infinite universe. And so there's only one group. And that one infinite universe has no members because there are no other universes. Right? Like say, okay, there's one group. It's not that there's one group of universes. There's one universe. It's not a group of universes, and there's nothing but the universe. You all with me on this?
Because it's, I thought there were many universes.
I'm saying there isn't. I'm making it up. Okay.
You're using that just as an example.
Yeah, I'm using it as an example. There's one universe, only one universe, because Buddhism will actually say this. There's only one universe, period, right? And there's nothing else but that universe. So everything that exists within that's interconnected, There's nothing else but that, right? And within that one universe, it's not like there are many universes. Like, say there's one group, like if you say there's one group of cats, in that one group of cats, of Persian cats, there's, you know, 100 or a million Persian cats. You don't say here in this one universe, there's a bunch of universes. There's just one universe. Okay. But now the thing is, if you do have end up with just this one universe, there's no other groups, there's just this one group, and this one group has only one member, this one member has many parts. It has many, many parts. They're all interconnected, making into one whole. So when we experience this universe, here it is, all interconnected, all made into one whole. You see what I'm saying? It's like one huge, infinite machine in the sense that there's an infinite number of laws. There's an order to it that holds together this infinite expanse of multiplicity. Is that Advaita? No. Svagata Bheda is there. Because in this infinite creation, there are many parts. So in the member, the one member of the one group, for which there are no other groups, this one member has many parts, which is all of this that we experience. Okay? That is not Advaita. Advaita means the member has no parts. There's one group, one member, and the member has no parts. That's Advaita. Okay? So then when you say, this universe, which has many parts, and Vedanta comes and says, yeah, but there's only one thing here. This duality has to be accounted for. Right? Now, another example we use to make a person... I use this example of the universe to show how some people might be talking about non-duality. This is a common way to think of it. What we have closest to Vedanta, the Vedanta understanding of non-duality, is space. And this is the reason for that. Space, right, is only one. There aren't two spaces. In the group space, there is only one member. Because anything that seems to divide it is false. Like if I say this is cup space, it's not cup space. Right, the cup is in space. But space isn't moving as I move the cup. This isn't room space, really. The space, what gives the space idea is the upadhi, the conditioning adjunct. So space is only one. So this one group has only one member, and this one member has no parts. Right? Space is not divisible. It doesn't have a right side or a left side. Space is just one non-dual presence. Whatever it is, it's one non-dual space. Indivisible. Yeah, but there's a problem. And that is the Vijatiya Bheda is there in that space is not air, is not fire, is not water, right? Space is only one of the five elements. It's different than the other five. For space to be one without a second, as Brahman is, you would have to say air is space, water is space, right? And so here, in Vedanta, you have to say the Atma or Brahman. Brahman is the table. Brahman is the chair. Brahman is the space. Brahman is the fire. Just like the example that we can use is if in the water, in the ocean, you could say this wave, right? This wave is water. This wave is water. This wave is water. This wave is water. Or we could say the water is this wave. The water is this wave. The water is this wave. The water is the whole ocean. There is nothing but water, right? That's what we have to be able to say, one without a second. But now we have to be able to say that in reference to all that is. This is Brahman, this is Brahman, this is Brahman, this is Brahman, this is Brahman. See what I mean? If anything is other than Brahman, that's Dvaita. Dvaita means everything is Brahman, and Brahman is one without a second. So Brahman is all there is. It is the only group, and it is only the only member of the group, and that member has no parts. That's one without a second. If that is so, right, then that which exists, that which actually exists, right, is one without a second. That which actually exists is one without a second. Two things cannot actually exist if there's a dvaita, by this definition. You see that? Only one thing can exist. Anything else that seems to exist, anything else that we experience, other than that one thing, can only appear to exist. Or to put it more clearly, it can itself depend on what does exist for its existence. It can't have a separate existence of its own. Like for the waves, if the wave had a separate existence, there's a wave and this wave and that wave, and then there was water also, that would be dvaita. You see that? I say, oh, there's this wave and this wave and this wave, and there's water. And there's the ocean too, right? Then that's dvaita, that's duality. But if I could say that the water, that the wave is totally dependent on its being for on the water, 100%, that in fact there is no wave there apart from the water. In fact, there's only water there. If I can say that, it's going to end up like that. There's only water there. The wave then is what we call apparent or enjoying a dependent reality. See that? Because it's there and it's experienced. We don't say it is non-existent, but we say that its reality is dependent on what is existent for it to be. That dependent reality is what we call mithya. That's mithya. We don't like to use the word apparent because apparent somehow takes it away from the satyam. It takes it away from what actually is. And if you think about the wave ocean example, if you think about the wave and the water, there is no appearance that is other than what actually is. Right? So what actually is and the appearance are one and the same, right? Because from the standpoint of the appearance, its being, its reality, is the water. The only thing is that it doesn't work quite mutually. In the wave example, the water, the wave is totally irrelevant to the water. The water need not be a wave at all. The wave can come and go. In the nama rupa, what we call the name and form, can come and go. The water has no dependence on it, and it's not defined by the wave either. You know, so the water isn't dependent on the name and form, wave. But the wave is 100% dependent on the water. That's why the wave is called mithya, and the water is called satyam. In the light of that example, the water is what is real, because the water doesn't come and go. The wave, name, and form comes and goes and is dependent for its being on the water. Right? And so, if we're looking for non-duality in terms of the wave ocean example, we can understand there are countless waves of all different, and foam, and so many different names and forms there, in terms of the waves on the ocean. But in terms of being, what is actually there, what is real, what is satyam, is only water. Right? There's really nothing else there. These waves that we experience them, so you can't say they don't exist, but you can't say that they have any reality at all apart from the water. So what we have to see here in reference to this world, if we're talking about Advaita, is that there is nothing here apart from that which is real, that which has, is being itself, which is the Atman, which is Brahman. That all of this, just like the wave on the water, has no separate being whatsoever apart from being itself. And so in this first statement, he makes this statement, for that which is asat, mitya, there is no being. Na bhavaha, na vidyate bhavaha asataha. So let's look at this word asat. What is meant by the word asat? The Vedanta makes, in order to understand this phenomena of Advaita, for you to be able to experience this universe and say, there's nothing here but me. That's what it amounts to. I am the whole. There's nothing here but me. We have to understand what all of these changing Namarupas, names and forms, are. So, we divide our experiences up in terms of orders of reality. This is also this Neo-Vedanta. This is where all kinds of terrible confusion takes place right here. And jumping causes people to be jumping levels, and everything gets very messy.
Schizophrenic.
Huh?
Schizophrenic.
Yeah. So, orders of reality. What we call paramarthika satyam. Paramarthika satyam. Paramarthika means that which is absolutely satyam, real. That which has absolute being, absolute existence. Satyam is translated as truth, existence, being. Paramarthika, absolute. By absolute, what is meant is that that being, which is satyam, can never be negated. In past, present, or future, it, as it is, it always is. It's free from time. There's no negation. It's not like it has a past or a future. It is only the presence of the present. It has no past, present, or future. So it can never be negated in past, present, or future. It means it always is, as is, it always is. That's paramarthika satyam. Okay? Nothing in the universe falls into that. Right? Nothing that we perceive, nothing that we experience, because all experience is subject to change, subject to time. Anything that is subject to change, subject to time, won't fit the definition, because the definition is that which never changes in past, present, or future. Means it's free from time, it's free from change. That which is, period, as it is, it is. What in the universe is free from change? So, if there is a paramarthika satyam, we're not experiencing it. Second order of reality is called mitya. Mitya here is often referred to as asat. So let me give you the definition of mitya. That which cannot be defined as paramarthika satyam, as existing really, free from all, that which doesn't change in all three periods of time, that which can't be negated in past, present, or future, that's paramarthika satyam. So mitya, that which cannot be defined as paramarthika satyam, and that which cannot be defined as non-existence, like tucham. Tucham means like the horn of a rabbit, or the son of a barren woman, or a city in the sky. Things that, or the horn of a man. Things that simply have never come into being. They're not there. They're not existent. Right? So we're never going to actually say tucham, this word tucham, doesn't really come into play in our analysis of this universe because we are experiencing the universe. You're not going to say, look at the universe and say this doesn't exist in the sense of the horn of a rabbit doesn't exist or in the sense that the son of a barren woman doesn't exist. You're not going to look at this universe and say it's not here unless, you know. Right? Because it is here. We are experiencing it. And so this idea of absolute non-existence is not applicable. So sometimes the word, when we use the word asat for this creation, of course we're not meaning absolute non-existence. We're meaning that which does not have satyam, that which does not have absolute existence. That is mithya. So the word asat means that which does not have satyam, paramartika satyam. That means, becomes synonymous with mithya. And mithya means that which has a dependent reality. Right? So look at this verse now. For that which is asat, right, there is no existence. For that which is asat, that which is mithya, there is no existence. For that which has existence, for that which is existent, there is no non-existence. Okay, so now, that creates an interesting situation. In Advaita, sat and asat are one. The ocean and the water is one. The ocean and the wave is one. The task is to understand the ocean and the water, the wave and the water is one. Everybody see that? Wave and water is one. Ocean and water is one. So we can see that, and if I were to say, well, our task, if you want to know where to set there, is to differentiate. To differentiate between the water and the wave. Right? But it's a very strange type of differentiation. Because you can't pull the wave off and have the wave over here and the water over here. Right? So you have to be able to differentiate between the changeless and the changing. Because there's no separation. There's no spatial separation. There's no separation in terms of being, but there is a separation in terms of the changeless and the changing. Because that which is satyam, by its very definition, that which is real, has real existence, it doesn't come and go. It doesn't come into being and go out of being. It comes into being and goes out of being. It's got to be a form. It's got to be changing. It's got to exist within time. All the things that come into being and go out of being are the things that we experience. So what here in this world of experience, because we're talking about this, doesn't come into being and goes out of being, that doesn't change, and is not away from what changes?
Yeah, what is that?
Yeah, what is that? But what I really want you to understand is the problem. That's why understand what I'm talking about here, because this is what we have to see, right?
Seems like the closest you can get would be the existence itself, not any particular form.
But the thing is, existence itself, the existence itself is rug existence, table existence, chair existence, body existence, thought existence, eye existence, ear existence, book existence, right? Just like you have to say wave water, this wave water, this wave water, right? So that you see, that you recognize, you can, now when we're thinking about the the wave ocean, you can get it immediately, right? That, yeah, it's only water, it's only water, it's only water. Now what you have to get is, oh, it's only me, it's only me, it's only me. Right? But to get it's only me, it's only me, it's only me, I have to recognize the water, the conscious being, which is the truth of this wave, right? And of all waves. That is the truth of this form and of all forms. Okay? Now, how to do that? Because it's not, there's nowhere to go, there's nowhere to look for this. Right? Because it's already completely here. In other words, think of the wave now. The wave searching all over for the water. Where's the water? Where's the water? You know, let me have a meditative experience of the water at least. You know, where is the water? So there's no looking involved here. There's recognition of what is. Right? You can't look out, like say if the wave's looking out, it's only going to see more waves. Or say it puts itself in some hyper state and it gets a kind of a expansive view of Ishwara, kind of like Arjuna got. When Arjuna asked Lord Krishna, let me see your Vishwasarupa, Swarupa. Let me see your cosmic form. I want to see what that's like. And so Lord Krishna said, all right. and gave Arjuna that vision of that cosmic form, you know. That'd be like the wave being given a vision of the entire ocean of many, many, many forms, vast, vast. And the wave gets this cosmic vision of the ocean. But the wave is still looking, and the wave is still one among many oceans and among many forms, and seeing all of this duality. But that is much, much different than the wave recognizing that there is only one water. Right? The recognition of the one water is a different recognition. It's a different type of recognition than the recognition of the whole cosmos, like a Vishwasarupa, a recognition of Ishwara's form. What we need to recognize is that the self which is the self of this being, is the self of this being, is the self of the rug, is the self of the space, is the self of the Vishwa, of the whole creation, is the self of the infinite, is the one self, which is the self of all. Now, and that self that we're talking about has got to be me. You know, it's like, think of this, the wave, and this is all this kind of this Neo-Vedanta type stuff. The wave wants to have an experience of the big self. It's the little self. It considers itself, its experience. The wave considers its experience to be the experience of the little self. And it wants to meditate so that it can have an experience of the big self. So it's having an experience of the little water. Its want wants an experience of the big water, right? But it is, there is no little water and big water. There's only water. So here, in the, you know, you can make the drishtanta fall apart if you press it too far. But if you just think as water is water, the wave is water. You know, it's not little water or big water. It is water. You are yourself. You're not the little self. You're not the big self. You are the self. And that self is not an object in the creation. If it's an object in the creation, it's mithya. It's subject to time and space, right? It's subject to change. So this conscious being that I am, it's not the big self or the little self. It's the only self. If there's a big self and a little self, then we're in dvaita again, right? There's no big self and little self. And the only thing that could divide a big self into a little self would be space, right? And form. And form always is mitya. Because form by its very nature is dependent upon the substance. There's a Swamiji in his beautiful commentary on this talks about, for instance, a shirt as a form. A shirt is dependent on cloth. Or, he said, or if it's made of paper, a paper shirt is dependent on paper. But the shirt has no existence apart from the cloth, that stuff from which it is made, its content, right? So any form is like that. Yeah, any form. It's mitya because it has no being of its own. It's dependent on something else. But the thing is, this dependency of name and form goes on infinitely. Like you could say that the cloth itself is a form dependent upon the threads. The thread is a form dependent upon the fibers. The fibers are forms dependent upon the molecules. The molecules are forms dependent upon the atoms. And where you're going in and in and in to try to show what is filling, what is the content of the form. But the idea here is that the form, whatever it is, has a content, and so therefore the form is mitya. It can't exist without without its dependency on something else. And so in reference to our whole experience of this creation, if I sit down, I just went off a little bit of circuitously around myself, big self or little self. What's going to make me a big self or little self, or a self that's different from you? Form. Only. What would divide me from you is form. Form are waves. Right? Forms are waves. What is the substance? And that substance, if we're looking at Dvaita, has got to be one. So now the question is, so all I want you to get right now at this moment is that there's only one, for you there is one substance. The question is, what is it? What is that substance and how to differentiate it? How to differentiate the satyam, note it down in your mind. How to differentiate the satyam from the mitya. Okay. Is everybody still with me? How to differentiate my experience right now from the satyam, the truth, that which is changeless? The water from that which is changing. So let me tell you one thing that the easiest way to differentiate it really is just the relationship that you have with your mind. And this is the reason. With your mind, there's the obvious mitya of the changing thoughts. It's right before you, right? Every perception that you have this thought, then you have this thought, then you have this thought, then you have this thought, right? So you have immediately before you change, that which comes and goes. In the same place, at the same time, there needs to be the experience of the changeless, the water, that which doesn't come and go. And the water can't be removed, can't be separate from the wave. So just in reference to your own mind, there should be something which, as the mind goes on changing, the content of it doesn't change at all. And so how to differentiate? Right? How to differentiate? Do you see how that's got to... If we're looking at Advaita, the Advaita, the water, is not going to be away from you. Is everybody... Whatever is Advaita, it won't be away from you. In fact, It has to be you. It's like if there's only one, if there's only one truth, that one truth, which is changeless, has to be you, because in reality there isn't anything else. In reality, everything else is totally dependent. It's not away from you. It's totally dependent on you. So it's like saying for the wave, the truth of the wave has to be the water, right? There's nothing else there. Right? So the truth of you has to be the one thing that is. Right? And there's nothing else there. So what gives you your experience of being, right, is not going to be the form. Let me put it this way. What gives the water its experience of being? What gives the water, what gives the wave its experience of being water? Water. Not the wave. What gives your experience of being? What gives you your experience of being? Not the form, but that which the form depends on. Yeah. It's not the form, but the being of the form. Does everybody see that? Mm-hmm. Now, if you see that, that's a huge thing to see, and this is why. If you see that it's not the form that gives you your self-experience, because the form has no experience apart from its substance. Like the clay, like the for the pot has no substance apart from the clay. The wave has no experience apart from the water. So what gives the wave its being or its self-experience is the water. Right? If I'm using that as a illustration. So what gives me my self-experience, my being, is not the form. It's the being. Okay? Now the thing is, it doesn't matter how small or big the forms are. They still have no being themselves. Like, for instance, if I take the example of a clay pot, and I say that the pot has being, right? And is that how I want to go? And I realize, break it into shards, and I realize that it's really not the pot that has been, it's the shards that make up the pot, pieces that make up the pot. Those have been, that has the being. And then I break those shards up into clay dust, and I realize it's not the shards that have the being, it's the clay dust that has the being. And then I put the clay dust under a microscope, and I realize, oh, it's not the clay dust that has the being, it's the molecules that have the being. And then I break the molecules up, and I say, it's not the molecules that have the being, it's all of the little atoms that have the being. And then break the atoms up, and I say, oh, it's not the atoms that have the being, it's all the quarks and things within the atoms that have the being. And then I break that up, and I see smaller parts, and I say, well, doesn't have the being, it's the substance inside of those little forms that have the being. And they break that up, and they're smaller forms. The idea is this. A form doesn't have the being. The substance has the being. And all our eyes are able to see our forms. Right? But the experience all the way through, from the pot to the shards to the dust to the molecules, is it is, 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 it is. But that isness is not something that ever changes, right? That isness, the being that all of these things enjoys, it's not like when I break the pot into shards, the pot is, now the shards are. You see that? I have a pot, now the pot is. I break it, and now the shards are. Do you get that? The pot is, I break it, the shards are. There's nothing happening to the is experience, ever. The shards are broken, right? And the dust is. It's not that there's been any jag in the isness. The is experience is constant. These, any type of analysis of the creation, we break it apart, put it together, it is, it is, it is, it is. In reference to the thought forms that go through your mind, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is. Happiness is, sorrow is, agitation is, perception is, memory is, love is. Any type, anything that's coming into the mind, it is, it is, it is. Also I can say, it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known. But the it is known is not fluctuating. So in fact, in our experience, there are what we call two types of buddhis. Two cognitions, a way of recognizing in every experience that you have. There's the cognition of the nama rupa, the name and form, right? Like lamp, painting, rug. Those are the cognitions of the names and forms. But every cognition has a content that is different than the name and form. It's the knownness and existence of the name and form. Like, look at, if I say lamp, if I want to say it completely, lamp is, okay? The lamp is and it is known. Or what if I say the lamp is known? So then we've got the object there and the experience is known and known. See that? Any cognition. Like the lamp is known. If I move over to the painting, now the painting is known. This form is the painting form is replaces the lamp form. Right? Then if I move over here, this painting is known. This window is known. This book is known. My memory is known. My imagination is known. The is-known cognition, right, is constant. You can't change it ever in any way. It doesn't matter the names and forms in the cognition. That's why we divide the buddhi into two. There's the sat-chit, which is the conscious being, that's the knownness and the isness. That's the invariable. And that's you, because it's you, because there's no way to objectify it. There's nothing deeper. The existent being, what it really is when you say, I am a conscious being. Right? The conscious being is the invariable in every vritti that you have, in every experience that you have. The sat-chit, if I say the lamp is known, the painting is known, the rug is known, that's like saying the lamp wave is water, the painting wave is water, the rug wave is water. Right? The is known is the water. The is known is the water. There is nothing ever at any time that is not filled with is known. There is nothing on any dimension, ever, anywhere, in any way, that can be differentiated, taken away from, or removed from is known. In this sense, the names and forms can keep going, going, going. The is known can never go. Right? Even if you got rid of all forms, all that would be left is known without any object. That's the self-evident nature of being, of consciousness, of yourself. Right? That's why yourself doesn't need to be known by any external mind or sense organs. You don't need anything to know yourself. Your very swarupa, your very nature, is known. And that is knownness is the water, right? It's the very water of all experience. You can never get away from it. And so now, when you think about it, the spatial dimension that you're experiencing in the room, for instance, right? If I say the wall is known, the space is known, the rug is known, my imaginations are known, my thoughts are known, my perceptions are known. We need to be able to differentiate that constant, you know, and that constant with the filler, that's the water. You know, that's the same in the subject and the object. Subject and object, there is no subject and object. Really, you can say like this. No, let me explain that. We can either say, you know, I am the subject and the object. You say there is no subject and object. Why? Because there's nothing that's not known. Like this body is known, this mind is known, these sense organs are known, this room is known, these thoughts are known, these feelings are known, the I thought is known. These are all objects. Where's the subject? So you can say, there is no subject-object, or you can say, I am the subject and I am the object. Or you can say, I am the subject of everything. Right? Because there is nothing that's away from me. Like what if the clay, what if the ocean, the water were to say, you know, I am all the waves. I am the whole. It is the whole. That's the truth of it. You know? So now your mind, if your mind says, I am the whole, it's by lakshana. When it says that, I am the whole, the mind is not saying, I, the mind, am the whole. It is recognizing the truth of the mind, which is the sat-chit. Like the truth, if the wave says, I am the whole, it doesn't mean the form is the whole. It means what it really is, the water is the whole. So if I say, I am the whole, I don't mean my mind is the whole. Right? I mean the truth of my mind is the whole. Which it is. My mind, I am the whole. Right? Because the self of the mind is the self of all. Right? The self of the body is the self of all. Because from the standpoint of the self, there's no time, there's no space, there's no change, it's not an object. So it's the very sat and chit, the very water which the whole creation enjoys. So this is the differentiation that has to be made. Or you can say, for that which is real, right, there is no abhava, there's no non-existence. It means there's no change. For that which is, there's no change. For that which changes, which is a sat, there's no reality. So what's the problem then? Where's the problem? There is no problem when this is understood. When this is not understood, then what happens is the wave takes itself to be the water, and the wave is subject to death. And the wave is subject to comparison with other waves. The other waves are taller, bigger, stronger, prettier. You know? More talented, have more money, et cetera, et cetera. You know? When that superimposition is there for the mind, there's so many problems, right? Because of that, because of the ignorance. And why shouldn't the mind take itself to be the self? Why shouldn't the wave take itself to be water? Because it is water, right? So why shouldn't the mind, which indwells this body and is never away from sat-chit, why shouldn't it take itself to be sat-chit? Until it gains knowledge, it has a means of knowledge to help it differentiate the sat, the changeless, from the changing, right? Because it's not a matter of seeing sat over here and an object over here. There's, just like with the wave ocean, there's no way of separating other than the recognition of myself as the changeless and everything else changing in my experience. And that's the recognition. And that has so many implications. For the Tattva Darshi Bihi, for the one who knows the Tattva, that which is the Tva, that Tva is the ness of that. That is a pronoun that stands for everything. So the essence of everything. The one who's a seer, when one who sees this, the essence of everything, for that person, the anta, the end of this, the resolution of all of this, is, of both of these, is clear. This is all completely clear. And that resolution, that anta, is really jnanam. It's advaita. That's the thing. The whole thing resolves into advaita. Advaita means I am the whole. Because you recognize your being and you recognize nothing as separate from it. Experientially, that darshi is an important word. You see it. See it means yourself is self-evident, so it is seen without eyes. It is seen without a mind. It is seen without sense organs. It is seen because it's self-evident consciousness. Right? It is its own experience. And all of the maya is seen because you have the upadis. You've got the sense organs. You've got the mind. So this is all seen. So you have the self-evident, stable, changeless being of yourself, which is seen because it's self-evident. And then you have all of these other perceptions that are seen because you have the upadi. Right? And so this is where the differentiation has to be made. And what happens is the upadis of the body, the mind, the sense organs, all the maya gets given over to the universe. And then I recognize all of this universe of my perception, just in this room, is enough. Right? All of this is asat. That is never in any way separate or apart from my being. That's what we have to keep seeing inside. So we'll stop there.
So maya and asatness.
Maya is what's really responsible for the projection of these names and forms, but its order of reality is mitya, asat.
Which is an asat.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's just take a minute. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.